Welcome to Cardiovascular Matters. Whether you are looking for answers for yourself or someone you love, we are here to give you the best information available. Each week, the founder of Cardiovascular Institute of the South, Dr. Craig Walker, and medical device sales veteran, Terry Roberts, discuss the causes, symptoms, treatment, and prevention of health-related issues stemming from cardiovascular disease. Now here's your hosts, Dr. Craig Walker and Terry Roberts.
Hey, welcome back to Cardiovascular Matters. You know, the premise of this podcast was started based on, you know, my observation of patients that would go see their doctor, and then everything's coming at them so fast, and a lot of big words and, scientific jargon, and maybe didn't understand exactly what the physician was saying, or maybe could not remember, didn't hear what was being said. So welcome back to the podcast. We're going to be talking today with Dr. Walker, as he's our expert and has been a great friend of mine and a customer of mine back in the day when I was working for the big medical device companies. So anyway, thanks for coming back, and be sure and like and follow us. We're available on all the platforms, but be sure and like and follow us. That helps our algorithm and helps us grow, and pass this along to your friends. Thank you very much. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to Cardiovascular Matters. In this week's presentation and discussion, we're asking the question, do I have peripheral artery disease, and does it matter? Dr. Walker?
Thank you, Terry. You know, peripheral arterial disease is something which has intrigued me for so many years. And, you know, historically it was thought, well, you know, you get leg pain, you get that maybe in the most severe cases. You end up losing a leg because of gangrene, but, you know, it's so much bigger than that. First off, peripheral arterial disease is incredibly common. Mary Yost of the SAGE Group estimates that more than 28 million people in America have peripheral arterial disease. And who gets it? A lot of people. So certainly the risk factors for peripheral arterial disease that are the biggest risk factors are smoking and diabetes. But just like heart disease, also there's a family prevalence. High cholesterol plays a role, and high blood pressure plays a role. Now, there was a study done in the past called the Pordner's trial. And in the Pordner's trial, they simply measured pressures in the legs and pressures in the arms and compared them. That's called an ankle brachial index. And they did this in people who were over the age of 70, just by reaching that age, or over the age of 50 if they had either had diabetes or smoked or both. And what they found was 29% of that population had evidence of peripheral arterial disease. And it's easy for people to say, well, so what? If they're not having symptoms at that point, does it matter? Well, it does. As a matter of fact, a physician named Newman looked at ankle brachial index, and he looked at what happens as the pressure in your legs is falling compared to the pressure in your arms. And what was shown was that life expectancy falls in almost linear fashion with the fall in blood pressure in your legs. It is a marker for death. That's pretty important, is it not? And often, the patients who have blocked leg arteries have blocked heart arteries. They have blocked arteries going to the brain, blocked arteries to the gut. So I tell people frequently, sick legs are almost never attached to totally healthy people. And I think that's a very common sense thing. And this is so easy to detect, yet we're missing it in our healthcare system. It's as simple as a healthcare practitioner checking the pulses in the feet. And I tell patients, ask your practitioner just to check your pulses. Mm-hmm. If they're absent, if they're present, you could still have peripheral arterial disease. But if they're absent, you do have peripheral arterial disease. There should be a pulse there that should be palpable. And if there's not, that may be the only clue that you're at risk of heart attack, stroke, or other problems. Because the very same things that cause peripheral artery disease cause it there. And you don't have to be symptomatic for this to be important. Now, this is incredibly important. It's incredibly important as well because peripheral arterial disease affects so many other things. For instance, part of what got me interested in peripheral arterial disease in the beginning is I would have to rush in to do urgent angioplasty on the heart on people coming in having heart attacks and in deep trouble just being able to get their blood to circulate from the heart attacks. And sure enough, if there are peripheral artery blockages, sometimes it was very hard to get through those just simply to get back to the heart to treat the heart. less important, because certainly, as I've mentioned, people with peripheral arterial disease are more likely to have heart disease in the first place. And so you certainly want to be able to keep your treatment options. But again, it's so much more than that. I've just mentioned earlier that sick legs are almost never attached to healthy people. Well, I'm going to give you a statistic that I think is very important. A patient with a new diagnosis of symptomatic peripheral artery disease, and here I'm speaking about disease involving arteries from about the waist down to the feet. That's what we're speaking about typically when we speak of peripheral arterial disease. We can also, some people would include the arteries going to the arms as peripheral arterial disease, but for the most part, these are the arteries from waist down. Mm-hmm. And a new diagnosis of symptomatic peripheral arterial disease, that patient is more likely to die of a heart attack than a person who's already survived a heart attack. So it's important. This is important prognostically. And I think it's been underemphasized in healthcare at this point. We have to do a much better job in evaluating peripheral artery disease if we're going to save lives and improve outcomes for patients. And it's something we just are not paying enough attention to in medical school. Now, peripheral artery disease on its far end in terms of affecting us, the worst thing is when we get out to gangrene and people get their legs amputated from that. But there's been a revolution in how we can treat people with peripheral arterial disease. First off, prevention. You know, we want to have people quit smoking. We have new medicines that help us lessen the likelihood of atherosclerosis, certainly statins and other medicines that control cholesterol. Blood pressure control, crucial. As I mentioned before, smoking cessation, pivotal, particularly in women. And sometimes they're very difficult to get to stop smoking. But so much more we can do. Now we have the ability to cross and open blocked arteries to the legs in the overwhelming majority of patients and restore flow. This is resulting in less amputations and improved symptomatic control of patients. But I think we'd be remiss if we didn't say that first and foremost, when we start treating these patients, is to say, you know what, Mr. or Miss, whomever we found has diminished pulses, you are at increased risk. You're at increased risk, and we don't want to just check your legs, because your legs are very important to you, but we want to check all of you. Because right, the rest of you is pretty darn important. We want to make sure that you're not at risk of suddenly having a heart attack or a stroke or these other cardiovascular disorders that are prevalent. And that those are fairly simple things to evaluate for once you've identified a person at high risk. You know, one of the tests that even with peripheral disease that I suggest people get, is an inexpensive test called a calcium score of the coronaries. It's an easy test. You lay in a CT machine for about a minute, and it tells us if there's calcium in the coronary arteries. If there is, then you're at higher risk of having heart disease. If there's none, then you can feel pretty good that, particularly if you're older, that your heart's probably in pretty good shape. Not 100%, but in terms of risk level drops tremendously if there's no calcium in the coronary arteries. Very important to make sure we optimize blood pressure. Very important we optimize cholesterol control. If we do these things, we typically can prevent not just the progression of atherosclerosis in the legs, which is peripheral disease, but limiting it throughout the body, which causes all these other things which kill us.
So if a patient's referred to you by a primary care physician, let's say they've got them on a couple hypertension medications and things are still not back in the normal realm, and that patient gets referred to you, and they come to your office and you're meeting them for the first time. Dr. Walker, is that something you look at? I mean, you pull their socks off, look at their feet, take their pulses, and I mean, that's just part of the workup that just standard?
I do that on every single patient because I think it's so important prognostically. I think it is tremendously important to check pulses to determine if they're there. And it's certainly part of the physical exam when you're in medical school. It's just doctors are so busy in today's world, it's very difficult, you know, to take the time to do that. But it should be done because, in my opinion, prognostically, it's too important to ignore.
Nice. What about when you do find a variance in their pulses, what are some of the next studies you would look to do in terms of in the leg to determine where that the blockage may be occurring?
Sure. So first off, some patients are symptomatic and some are not. Even the asymptomatic patient should be evaluated, but if they're symptomatic, I like to understand how much symptoms. The typical symptom that we get initially is claudication or calf muscle pain with walking. Yeah. And that's typically pain that occurs, and it's predictable at a certain level of exercise. It goes away with rest, and it comes back when you exercise again. But some people don't ever get claudication, particularly women, Terry. It's very interesting. For some reason, women have less muscle mass, and women often just present with critical ischemia. Critical ischemia is pain at rest or ischemic ulceration or gangrene. Some people just go straight to that without ever having had these other symptoms. Now, the first test is to just feel pulses, but the next test are measuring pressures in the legs, as we've mentioned, the ankle brachial index. That's just done with blood pressure cuffs, and we're measuring the flow. Or we can use an arterial duplex. An arterial duplex is ultrasound applied from the outside of the body, and it looks for flow. And that lets us map out vessels. It lets us see the arteries. It lets us see flow, and it can tell us about blockages. Now, if indeed we're planning to do something to restore flow, if that person is in jeopardy of losing a leg or the symptoms are just disabling, then oftentimes we have more advanced tests that we do. We can do regular angiography. We can do CT angiography, which does not require sticking an artery. Or when we're doing angiography, if that person has kidney dysfunction, we can do what's called CO2 angiography. And instead of giving contrast, which may have issues if a person has kidney dysfunction and there may be allergic response, we can actually use CO2 and avoid using contrast at all. Those things allow us to see the arteries in more detail and plan if we need to open these, what would be the best route of approach, the safest route, and what would be apt to give us the most durable result. We'd be looking for how long is a blockage, where is the blockage, is it calcified, how big is the vessel. All of these things matter in terms of treatment, but as I've mentioned before, in today's world, the overwhelming majority of patients with peripheral arterial disease can have successful outcomes with intervention if required, but not everyone needs an intervention. First steps are controlling cholesterol, controlling smoking, doing those things, starting aspirin, a baby aspirin if a patient is not at high risk of bleeding, and maybe Plavix, and sometimes the use of a drug called cilostazole, which does help to improve blood supply to the legs. A walking program. Walking programs have been shown to improve circulation and lessen risk. But in some patients, that's not enough, particularly the critically ischemic patients. Those typically require restoration of blood flow at least long enough to heal their ulcer or to allow if they've got a gangrenous toe that needs to come off to allow that to heal. All too often in our country, however, people just take that toe off, don't restore blood flow, and then that area doesn't heal. And that's not surprising. If the blood flow was so bad that it died in the first place, it may not heal. And so I think it's very important for us to coordinate specialties to make sure we understand blood flow ahead of time and to make sure we provide appropriate care.
That is outstanding. And in future shows, we're going to take a deeper dive into each vessel bed and how things are treated and how you open those up. But for an initial introduction, I think that's very thorough, and just be sure and stay tuned as we dive into these topics in a more broader and more specific fashion. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and please subscribe, like, and share this podcast with your friends and family. Join us next week for new topics and answers with Dr. Craig Walker and Terry Roberts on Cardiovascular Matters.